Hearst Ranch is a proud sponsor of the Heritage Radio Network. Learn more about Hearst Ranch at HearstRanch.com.
You're listening to Heritage Radio Network. We're a member-supported podcast network broadcasting over 35 weekly shows live from Bushwick, Brooklyn. This year, we're celebrating 10 years of food radio. For the past decade, we've been taking you behind the scenes of farms, restaurants, breweries, school cafeterias, and more. It's been 10 years, and we're just getting started. Find us at heritageradionetwork.org.
Hello and welcome to Why Food, a podcast about entrepreneurs, innovators, and career changers who make the food world such an interesting place to live and work and eat. I'm your co-host, Ethan Frisch, without Valerie this week, unfortunately, but I am very happy to be joined by Monica Ortiz and Daniel Reza, who are the founders and chocolate makers of La Rifa Chocolate. Thanks for joining me.
Thank you so much for having us.
Yeah, thank really you for excited. The invitation. We're so excited.
I'm very excited to have you, and I'm especially excited because you brought some chocolate to taste, which is always a fun way to record an interview. But let's start by telling me a little bit about what is La Rifa and how did you come to start it?
Okay, so La Rifa Chocolateria is a chocolate shop that we have in Mexico City. We mostly do chocolate bars and chocolate drinks, I mean cacao-based drinks. In Mexico, it's traditional to drink chocolate rather than eat it. So that's pretty much what we do. We work with different cacao varieties, and we love to talk about all of the things that we have discovered in this chocolate path we've been walking.
The idea is to work together with the cacao farmers, with the cacao families, no? And more people find again the real flavor of the chocolate in Mexico City.
Yeah.
And in Mexico and other countries and other cities, because it's so weird, the cacao bean, it's endemic from this region. We grow it in this region, and it's so sad and it's so bad. Now in this city and in Mexico, it's so difficult to find real chocolate, no? We only can find in the supermarkets, in the markets, candies with chocolate flavor. No? And La Rifa, our project, we can make the difference. We can inspire other people in Mexico to make more chocolates with cacao farmers.
And why do you think, I mean, the same thing is true in the United States, obviously, and all over the world, that cacao as an agricultural product from farms and from farmers is so disconnected from the chocolate that most people eat when they eat chocolate. Why is that? Why have we gotten so far from cacao as an agricultural product?
I think the city's invisibility of the origin of the all our food, no? And in this case, the candies, I think the big industry need make more chocolate, more cheap chocolate. And in the Mexican case, this industry and with the government change the rules. And now in the etiquetas,
the labels,
in the labels, you can see the cómo se llama the ingredients and the words
in the chocolate labels are everything but chocolate. I mean, it's flavored, it's colored, but nothing is cacao, real cacao, real chocolate.
So tell me more about what you're doing. What are you doing at La Rifa to fix that, to change the way that
Well, We are doing a cacao tasting tour. I mean, we love talking about cacao, chocolate, bean to bar process, bean to drink chocolate. And mostly what we're doing is trying to explain people the importance of agroforestrial system, which is the a cacao plantation where the cacao tree grows is an agroforestrial system. So we're trying to tell people about the importance of keeping those kind of agroforestrial system alive in order to preserve the biodiversity, not just in Mexico or Latin America, but also in other parts where cacao also grows. And we're trying to make people taste different chocolate. I mean, the same chocolate bar that you're going to buy in Japan or Brazil or Mexico City is going to taste like one single thing. And kind of our mission is to change that whole perspective. I mean, we're going to taste chocolate bars later on, but you're going to taste a lot of things, like a lot of different things inside a cacao bean, a lot of different flavors inside a cacao bean. And all of those flavors are because of all the flowers, fruits, spices growing inside of an agroforestrial system. So spreading the word of real chocolate and what real chocolate must taste like is kind of what we're doing right now.
I think most people may not even know that chocolate grows on a tree, but definitely don't know what it looks like, how it's harvested. Can you walk us through that process? Explain the agricultural process behind chocolate. Daniel has a tattoo of a cacao pod on his arm, so tell us about it.
In Mexico, the people think it's a papaya.
Okay. It looks a little like papaya.
Well, the cacao, I think it's the most important point. The cacao can't grow up into the monocultives, no? Monocultives, sold with only one bean or only one variety of many cane, corn,
It has to be grown in a biodiverse environment. It can't be grown in a monocropped system.
Yeah, and this agroforestal system have three levels, no? And the first level, the tall trees, we have the mother trees, no? The cacao farmers say this, no? This is the mother trees of the cacao, because these trees protect todo lo que está abajo.
Everything that's below it. But those are not cacao trees.
No.
Yeah. Those are shade trees that protect the cacao trees that grow underneath them.
Yeah, like a cinnamon, ceibas, caoba, and other big trees.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Chico zapote, mamey, other trees protect this
the cacao
the plantation.
Tree. And the cacao trees themselves are pretty small, right?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. They grow like
Tres metros?
Yeah, about 15 feet.
Sometimes the oldest trees have 10 metros. No?
Yeah.
But it's more easy for the cacao farmers
to harvest.
To keep them a little bit lower. And then the cacao pods themselves. So chocolate, when we've had cacao nibs, those little nibs, can you kind of walk that process backwards to the bean?
I'm going to tell that story because that's kind of my favorite part of the entire thing. So chocolate comes from the cacao bean. A lot of people don't even know what cacao is, but cacao is a fruit that grows inside of this agroforestrial system. So the cacao pod grows in the tree, and it comes from a really, really small flower, the cacao flower, which gets pollinized by a mosquito. And then the pod starts growing. Inside of the pod, we have like a, when you cut open the pod, you can see like a small corn covered with mucilagus, and that's the cacao bean.
Yeah.
So the cacao bean goes through...
Oh, hold on. Let's talk about the pod for a second.
Okay.
So the pods are all kinds of crazy colors, right?
Yeah. It depends on the variety.
Okay.
It's like apples. For example, you have red apples, green apples, yellow apples. And it's the same thing with cacao. There's three traditional classifications. There's the criollo variety, the trinitario variety, and the forastero variety. These all are different, completely different cacao pods, flavors, sizes, colors. You can see a lot of things inside of a same cacao plantation. So yeah, most of the production worldwide in cacao, it comes from Forasteros and Trinitarios, you know?
And mostly in West Africa, that's the...
Yeah, Mesoamerica and Africa.
Okay.
Yeah, are the
Africa
two...
Africa is the major industrial producer.
Exactly. And the pods themselves are sort of the shape of a football, like an American football.
Yeah,
they
come to
kind of points at either end, and they've got big ridges, kind of a rough, looks like a lizard skin or something, and bright purple and green and red, all kinds of crazy colors.
Yeah.
I'm sure on your website there's lots of pictures of cacao pods.
Exactly.
All right. So then, sorry to interrupt you. What happens after? So you pick the pods off the tree. You cut them open.
Yeah. You cut them open, and then you have two ways to go. You can either wash the cacao, which is a traditional way to have it in Mexico. Mexico is the only place where cacao is being washed. So you washed off all the pulp, which is the mucilagos, and then you get a really plain flavor. Those beans, those washed cacao beans, are going to have a really, really plain flavor, which is made for the drinks. In Mexico, we also mix cacao with different spices, depending on the region that you're drinking it. So having a plain flavor, it's a really good thing when you're going to mix it with pepper, cinnamon, achiote, old spice, or whatever. That's one way to go. The other one is the fermentation process. So cacao beans get fermented for more intense flavors. And which is going to do the trick is the mucilagos. So when you cut open the cacao pod, you put it inside a wooden box. And the cacao farmers are going to cover it with banana leaves. And they're going to leave it there for, let's say...
2 days, okay. Next the cacao farmers move because the bacteria need
air.
And next they move the cacao 24 hours again.
And how long does that fermentation process last in total?
It's depend of the weather and the variety and different points, but sometimes it's like a 5-6 days.
Okay.
6 days, I think it's the most.
The farther.
And using just the natural sugars in the fruit of the cacao to jumpstart the fermentation.
Yeah, exactly.
So, what does it taste like when after the fermentation? How does the flavor change over that process?
So intense.
Yeah. Before the fermentation, the cacao it's very very tannino.
Tannic.
Yeah. And after the fermentation, the cacao have a completely different flavor, more fruity, more sweet, more citric, more acid, and it depends of the terruño, no? The variety and the cacao plantation.
Yeah, the terroir.
It's... I think the fermentation is the most important step on the flavor of the cacao. And it's the, in cacao case, it's the not control step, no? The not control
process
wild fermentation, no? And I think it's impresionante.
Impressive,
no? The different flavors you can find in different towns, different plantations, different cacao farmers. Different cacao families, no?
And is the fermentation mostly being done by farmers themselves, or is there somebody else who specializes in that process?
Every farmer has their own way to ferment their cacao. So there's not a, as Daniel was saying it, there's not a standardized process.
Yeah.
So it depends on the region, the altitude, the weather, a lot of elements that have to happen to get this fermentation done. See, but it's all about the cacao producers.
Okay, so we've got this fermented cacao. They look like little almonds, almost.
Yeah, brown almonds. When you cut it open, it's a white
purple,
bean.
Uh-huh.
White bean covered for
the
with
fruit
the
is white, and then the...
exactly. And then after the fermentation,
you
have like brown beans.
Yeah.
So after the fermentation, you're just going to dry it to the sun. That's going to end the fermentation, kill the bad bacteria that you don't want in your chocolate, and then it gets to us back in Mexico City.
Okay.
The dry is other important process.
Yeah.
Yeah, to take the humidity out.
Yeah.
Because if you don't have a good drying, you're going to have some humidity notes inside of the cacao beans.
What does humidity taste like?
Weird. Like, have you ever tasted like a bad washed cup or something?
Sure, yeah.
That's how it tastes. Mm,
okay, so like a little funky, a little old.
Like it's, I mean, cacao has a lot of funky flavors.
Yeah. Uh-huh.
I mean, that's the amazing part of it. But sometimes something doesn't work out on that funkiness.
Okay.
You know, like that's when you know humidity.
Like a grasa.
Like a fat.
Fatty.
Like
fat,
yeah.
Like a
fungus.
Yellow cheese.
Yeah.
Uh-huh.
Okay.
But something not weird. Good.
And,
no, it's not.
And we'll come back to what you're doing at Larifa in a minute, but I want to make sure the theme of our show, this podcast, is people who have changed careers on Monica. That's very much
See,
your story.
That's my story.
So before we get into the details of what you're doing at Larifa, tell us your story. Tell us
okay.
how you wound up doing this. And Daniel, you were a chef, right? Or you are a chef,
yeah,
I should say.
Yeah, a cook. Yeah, a chef.
And Monica, you were
a psychologist. Yeah.
All right. So how did this all happen?
Yeah. Well, Daniel is my partner, so we've known each other for 8 years now. So I was ending college in Mexico, and Daniel had already finished his major. Well, not a major. His career as a chef. So he was looking for doing some desserts and. Well, La Rifa started like a small project. Like we were going to farmers market and stuff like that. And I wasn't really, really involved at first because I was doing my thesis and I wanted to explore some fields in psychology. But after a while, I mean, that is my boyfriend, just to be clear. I don't think a lot of people know that.
Partners and partners.
Partners and partners, exactly. So I was helping him just doing the pictures, marketing, trying to find more events for us to go as La Rifa. We started making bonbons. Well, Daniel is the one making all the chocolate at the beginning. I was just doing like the organization things and just, I don't know, trying to work as a psychologist, but also helping in La Rifa. So it was interesting because, I mean, after all, I really loved speaking to people, like talking to them, listening to them. And in the end, I ended up doing it by just working at La Rifa, you know?
When Daniel first started working on this, and what did you think of this idea? Or
you're crazy, man. Why?
Why did you think he was crazy?
He was working in a restaurant. Yeah. And one day, I remember us being on the subway, I think. And he was like, I'm going to start a chocolateria. Because you cannot find chocolaterias in Mexico City. And I was like, why? Why are you going to do this? So he was going to leave his job. He was going to do it 100% chocolate. And I was like, okay. I was really, really hesitant about it. And I had a lot of doubts. But cacao has taught me a lot and a lot of trust. Mostly.
And Daniel, what was your process? How did you make that decision?
I'm working in a chocolateria 7 years ago, or 80 years ago.
Like an internship.
Okay.
In Mexico City, but we only make it. We work to the chocolate to the bonbons and chocolate sculptures.
So starting with like chips of chocolate or pieces of already made chocolate that you're melting down and recreating into other shapes. Yeah.
Uh-huh. And we started to think about the. Where is the origin? Where is the origin of this chocolate? No, we don't know nothing about this chocolate. But I really, 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 really love temper the chocolate with the hand, and I really, really love to make the sculpture chocolate in this time. No, and more bonbons and truffles. But when we the idea for in the first was only make this. No. Like this idea, bonbons, truffles. But we start to think about the origin of our chocolate, no? And we don't think nothing about our chocolate. And the only way to make something was to make our chocolate. In this moment, this idea was an easy idea. But Monica, my father, some friends, my sisters said, this is a crazy idea, no? We need a big machines, we need a big space, we need muchas cosas.
Yeah, a lot of things, a lot of equipment. Yeah.
To make chocolate. But we don't sleep good if we don't know nothing about the origin of our chocolate.
Yeah.
And well, we start to travel to Tabasco and Chiapas, is the states with most production of cacao. And we start to learning the cacao farmers, no? Aprendiendo los cacao farmers.
Yeah, meeting them. Yeah.
Meeting and start to relationship, no? And relation to family.
Start relating with them, knowing about those post-harvest process, the fermentation, the washing part. Uh-huh. And I don't know, just like by talking to them, we learn so much about a lot of things that we weren't doing.
Yeah.
We're going to take a quick break and we'll be back in 2 minutes. Stay tuned.
Hearst Ranch is a proud sponsor of the Heritage Radio Network. The Hearst family has been raising cattle on the rich, sustainable native grasslands of California's Central Coast for over 150 years. Piedra Blanca Rancho in San Simeon is the original Hearst Ranch, founded by George Hearst in 1865. George's son was the famous publisher William Randolph Hearst. In addition to being known for building the iconic Hearst Castle, William was, like his father before him, an avid rancher. In his words, "I would rather spend a month at the ranch than any place in the world." Thanks to one of the largest land conservation easements in California history, a joint effort with the California Rangeland Trust, the American Land Conservancy, and the state of California, the working landscape at Hearst Ranch will be preserved forever. Learn more about Hearst Ranch at HearstRanch.com.
Are you enjoying this podcast? Heritage Radio Network has plenty more. My name is Linda Liu, and I'm the host of Feast Meets West, the show that celebrates Asian culture through the lens of food here on HRN. Listen to episodes like The Evolution of Chinatown with Numwa Tea Parlor's Wilson Tang and New York Times' Elaine Chen. Catch our ongoing series, Women in Asian Food, and spotlight episodes with our heroes like Anita Lowe. You can find Feast Meets West wherever you listen to podcasts and on heritageradionetwork.org.
And we're back. You're listening to Why Food. I'm Ethan. No Valerie this week, unfortunately, but I am joined by Danielle and Monica of La Rifa Chocolateria in Mexico City. Right before the break, we were talking about their initial visits to cacao farms to meet cacao farmers. What did the farmers think when you showed up with this idea? You were going to highlight origin, highlight Mexican chocolate. What did they think when you showed up on the farm?
We met a couple of friends from Tabasco in a big chocolate event happening in Mexico City. Those were the ones that introduced us to the cacao producers. And at the beginning, they were really, really reluctant to speak to us, right? Because there's like old people. The cacao farmers are old people. Like there's not many.
Not a lot of kids in the cacao farming game. Yeah.
That's kind of a sad story. They were like not opening to us. I mean, we were just strangers for them. Why should they tell us anything or sell us their cacao, you know?
Mm-hmm. Pero tuvimos mucha fortuna de...
Yeah, but we were really lucky to find really amazing cacao farmers.
Muchos amigos.
A lot of friends. Yeah.
When was that? How long have you been doing this?
¿Cómo?
¿Cuánto tiempo llevas conociendo productores?
I think 6 years.
Oh, yeah. Wow.
Five or six years,
yeah.
So they were reluctant, they were skeptical at first.
Yeah, exactly.
And how did you win them over? How did you convince them?
Well, we weren't really going to Tabasco for business. We were just like trying to figure out things, like what we were doing. I mean, walking in a cacao plantation, let me tell you something, it's wild. Like wild, a lot of hot, humidity, mosquitoes everywhere, and we were just trying to understand how cacao grew and how are we going to make chocolate from scratch. So we are starting talking to them, like just hanging and walking in the plantations, talking about
working
what we
together,
did, working together. I don't know if we could teach to them as much as they have taught us, but we were just like sharing what we knew, what we were doing. I mean, Daniel was doing bonbons, truffles. A lot of people in Tabasco, they don't eat chocolate because Tabasco and Chiapas are really, really humid states. So having a chocolate bar in that weather is just impossible. So we were just like sharing our personal experience with them. And that's how we start building a relation, like a friendship relation before anything else could happen, like a business relation, I think.
Yeah. I remember when we worked with a good friend, cacao farmer, Monica Jimenez, mm-hmm. other Monica, we asked him, preguntar?
Her. We asked her.
We asked her, ¿cuál es? ¿Cuál es?
Yeah, en español también. Okay. I'll translate.
De los cacaos que tienes, ¿cuál me sirve para cada cosa? Y ella solo dijo, ese es tu problema. Y en ese momento aprendimos más de lo que... Porque ese es nuestro trabajo, ¿no? O sea, saber dónde podemos usar cada cacao.
So the question to... Well, you can...
Okay, so Monica Jimenez, which is a really good friend of ours, cacao farmer, her family has been harvesting cacao for 3 generations now.
Uh-huh.
And she was like teaching us. We were working in the plantation, in the cacao plantation with her. And Daniel was asking, she has many varieties, cacao varieties inside of the plantation. And Daniel was asking her like, oh, which cacao is better for bonbons or bars or cacao based drinks? And she was like, I don't know. That's your problem. And that's where we like everything fell into places for us. But
So have you brought either your bars or your drinking chocolate, have you brought those things back to the farms to have the farmers taste?
Yeah, exactly.
And what do they think?
What's their reaction? Cuando le diste su barra?
I think it's a special moment.
Yeah.
Because in this case, the Don Tito and Monica Jimenez.
Don Tito is Monica's father.
Okay.
Who taught her how to harvest and everything.
They know and they tasting many, many chocolates because they love the chocolates. No? And when they say, I really like your chocolate, I think I feel like...
we're doing something right. Yeah.
We are making chocolate. No? Yeah. But with other farmers, the situation is very, very different. No, we working with other cacao farmers, and I remember the his face because they don't believe his cacao it's good for chocolate. I think they know they believe.
Yeah.
His cacao it's not good cacao, but when they tasting his chocolate with his cacao, your face is like this is with my cacao.
It's amazing.
Yeah. Uh-huh.
So let's taste some chocolate. I want to have amazing experience. Let's show me tell me what you brought and
okay. So we brought 4 different chocolate bars which we make with different cacao varieties. Every bar has technical information in the back just because we want people to know exactly what they are having. We also want to have the producer's name. So you can know who is producing the cacao that you're about to taste. And these all 4 chocolate bars are 70% cacao, 30% sugar, nothing else. I mean, you only really need cacao and sugar to make chocolate. You don't need any, lecithin, I don't know, chemical or lecithin or anything, just to taste the amazingness of the cacao.
And where should we start? What's...
I think you should start with the Uranga one.
Okay.
Which is that one.
And exactly. What's the best way to taste chocolate?
Ah, perfect. That's a great question to ask. So I think you should break the bar Feel the texture. Look the color.
Okay. Yeah. All right. So I'm going to open the packet.
Yeah.
Look the color. All right. You can smell it.
So it's a really like a beautiful dark brown chocolate colored, but it almost has sort of a reddish tinge. Smells amazing. Smells like.
You can break it and you can smell even more of that.
Is the sound important when you break it?
Yeah, I think it's important.
I heard it.
Is that what it's supposed to sound like?
Sí. Thank you.
It smells amazing.
The temperature.
It's really important.
It's really, really important because if it's not well tempered, the experience is so different. You can feel the
particles.
Like the particles, like
grainy texture or something.
Yeah, grainy texture.
So then what's next? How should we taste it? You're already on it.
Let it melt in your mouth.
Yeah, so you break it and then.
You can lo puedes morder poco solo para que
you can bite it a little bit
para que se funda más rápido.
But the idea is to let it melt on your tongue. Right, you lucky listeners get to listen to us. get to listen to us having cacao melt
right
in
now,
our mouths.
I think when you had the first chocolate bite, you can feel a lot of flavors. I mean,
it's very malty. It has a very distinctive malt flavor and something fruity, something bright, like an orange or citrus.
Mm-hmm. It's citric. It's intensive. It's like many fruits inside.
Mm. Uh-huh, exactly.
Yeah.
Fruits.
Chocolate bar. Huh?
Yeah, a little banana, a little apple, a little.
And all of those flavors are because of what grows surrounding the cacao tree.
Interesting.
So I want you to try more because if not, I'm going to ruin the experience.
All right, should we try another bar?
Sí.
Which one?
I think you should try the Blanco Marfil now, which is another variety that it's from Monica Jimenez too. The first two chocolate bars that we tried are from Monica's plantations. And this is a Criollo variety endemic from Mexico City.
Oh, wow. The Oranga, the one that we just, the first one that we tasted, almost has like a tomato flavor at the end.
Yeah.
Wow. Interesting. Like a cherry, like a sweet tomato flavor.
Sweet tomato. Wow.
All right, so then the Blanco Marfil.
It's a native cacao.
Okay.
From Mexico.
Where is this farm?
In Pichucalco.
In Tabasco?
Pichucalco is a small town in Chiapas, the north of Chiapas. Okay. Really, really close to Tabasco. So the color is different.
Can you compare?
Color is a little bit lighter, a little bit more red.
It almost looks like a milk chocolate.
Yeah, it does.
But it doesn't have any milk or anything else. The reason of the color is because the name of this variety is Blanco Marfil. The reason of this is because when you cut open these cacao beans, are white. Normally they are purple or pinkish, but these ones are white because...
The seeds themselves?
Yeah,
the cacao seeds.
Exactly. Because of the amount of cacao butter that they have.
Oh, wow. So a very high fat cacao.
Yeah.
Exactly.
All right.
The butter in the nature, it's like many flavors.
Mm. Take many flavors.
In the cacao plantation, the nature.
Makes sense. Like when you're cooking, you start with butter and it soaks up all the flavors and
I think,
does the same.
This is the reason because the human love the chocolate. Because the cacao bean have a 40%, 35% of natural cacao butter, and with sugar and with a little kind of acid, it's all of elements we love it in the food, no? Inside of the food.
Yeah, and this has a lot of acid. This has a lot of acid flavor. Very, very
citric,
fruity. Yeah.
Fruity. Yeah.
Grapes almost. It's almost like red wine. Mm-hmm. That like deep acidic flavor.
Like raisins. For me, it tastes like raisins right now.
Yeah.
It changes. I mean, cacao also changes during time, during the harvest and everything, which is also an amazing thing to have because you can have many, many different flavors in one same bar, chocolate bar. So I think that's a really amazing thing to happen in nature, you know?
Yeah, incredible.
I think it's a good example, these two bars, because these varieties of the cacao grow up together in the same plant cacao plantation. Mm-hmm. And you can see and feel and smell the big difference, no? And now you can imagine the, this is only a little example for one cacao plantation. No?
And this also, this one, I mean, just going back to what you said earlier about the fat content in this, you feel it in your mouth. It sort of coats your mouth at the end. Yeah. It's a really interesting texture. I mean, I think one of the other things, we're running a little short on time, so I want to make sure we talk about, I mean, Mexico is the native home of the cacao tree, and there's an ancient tradition of consuming cacao products, which seems like it's mostly been lost or forgotten. So tell me a little more about how what you're doing at La Rifa is connecting to that that tradition, that history.
So, as I was telling you, cacao in Mexico is normally in drinks. You know, there's more than 60 different cacao-based drinks, depending on the region, the town, on on what they have on the what spices they have on their towns. But sadly,
la forma que se consumía,
that was a traditional way to have it. I mean, cacao is not a drink.
In the Mesoamerican civilization, like an Aztecs, Mayans, Olmecas, Toltecas, different civilizations, the only way to eat cacao,
consume cacao,
it's a drink, no?
And how did they make those drinks?
They have a, these cacao drinks, traditional cacao drinks, have a 3 points in common, no? The first is they use cacao with corn, no? And the second, it's they use endemic spices of this region, no? Like achiote, like bejuco, other endemic spices of the regions. And the third, and I think it's the most important, all of these cacao, all of these chocolate drinks, they consume cold, no?
not milk. They use water from the river because cacao is not a candy.
Yeah.
I mean, cacao is everything but a candy. Cacao is a full meal, you know? And they imagine yourself being a cacao farmer in a really, really humid weather. You just want something to fill you and take the thirst out of you.
Something refreshing.
Exactly. So they bring their small paste, which is made with, they drink pozol. So it's a paste made with cacao and corn. So they have the paste, they go down to the river, take a jicara, take some water, and just mix it with the paste. They drink their pozol and they're good to go.
And the paste is ground up cacao beans and corn, and that's
it? That's it.
Is it sweet? What does it taste like?
It's not sweet. It's bitter.
It's
bitter. It tastes like a tortilla. I think it's the best example.
Because of the corn.
It's like a tortilla with corn.
Tortilla.
Espeso.
Thick. It's really thick. It's like a smoothie. Well, not with milk, but
that
really
kind of
thick
texture.
Exactly.
Okay. And so this is something that farmers still do, or this is a historic practice?
No, it's a historic practice, but they still do it.
Okay.
I mean, when you're on that weather, you just want a pozol, even if you don't like it.
Yeah.
You just need a pozol to keep going.
Yeah.
So what we were doing or trying to do is to keep these traditions alive. I mean, to make people recognize the traditional flavors in chocolate, in cacao, and children, like, when I was a children, I thought in chocolate as hot chocolate, hot cocoa, milk chocolate with marshmallows on top of it. But actually, no. In Mexico, we drink it with water. It's cold-based chocolate with water because it's a really, really hot weather too. And we're trying to keep those traditions alive, I think.
Uh-huh. And now our idea in La Rifa is make more chocolate and bring to the coffee shops in Mexico City and more people can find this chocolate. No? Mm-hmm. And 5 years ago, we start to organize a big festival with 50 different projects with cacao.
Working with cacao.
And come with cacao farmers to the city. The other people know the cacao farmers, the face of his chocolate, no? And before, after this, we start to, we open a other little shop with 24 projects.
Working with chocolate and cacao. The idea was to find a place where you can find real chocolate with Mexican projects. And yeah, we wanted to have a store where you could find a lot of things like chocolate bars, chocolate powder to make the drinks, and it has been funny.
How's it going? What's the response been like? You've been in business for 6 years?
Yeah. A lot of people are drinking chocolate, so...
Or eat
chocolate, but they're drinking chocolate. I mean, when you come to La Rifa, you drink chocolate, a lot of chocolate. And
what's your most popular way to drink it, or what style are people connecting with most?
I think the semi bitter chocolate that we have at La Rifa, which is 50% cacao, 50% sugar. It's like a balanced blend between the sugar and the bitterness of the cacao. Mm-hmm. They drink it a lot with water and cold. I don't know why.
It sounds like that's the way that you wanted them to drink it.
Yes, of course. Yeah. We love hot, cold chocolate. I mean, it's so refreshing and it gives you a lot of energy.
And do you find that, are people coming to you, like what brings people to your shop, or what are people looking for when they come into La Rifa?
I think
it's a blend. No?
Yeah.
Because you can find families, no? And you can find... students, chocolate lovers, tourists. I think I really like this idea because it's not a specific
crowd.
Crowd, no?
Yeah, you can see everything inside La Rifa. People just going to buy chocolate bars, people sitting with a friend drinking hot chocolate, mm-hmm. cold chocolate, families, like ancient people.
Grandparents, grandparents.
See, grandparents.
Yeah.
There's a lot of people.
Chocolate. Yeah. It's, I think this is the idea in the principio.
At the beginning.
At the beginning.
This was the idea.
Because all of the chocolaterias in Mexico City or other cities, it's a really, really like a fancy chocolate. But it's not a...
real.
It's not real, right?
Yeah. And our idea is to make one chocolateria when the people
could relate with that chocolateria, not the fancy ones, but the real chocolaterias.
And do you find that your background in psychology helped you with that? Is that how has your current career in chocolate built on your previous career in psychology?
Well, as I was telling you, I get to speak with a lot of peoples. A lot of people. I get to have different perspectives, like the cacao producer's perspective, the kid's perspective when they don't like the bitterness of the cacao, or when a grandma comes to La Rifa and she's like, oh, this is the way I used to drink chocolate with my grandma. My grandma taught me how to grind the cacao and make it into chocolate, use the molinillo and everything. It's like what I wanted to do. I mean, I did not want to be in an office. I really want to speak with people and connect with somebody else. I think that's what's the most fulfilling thing about being at La Rifa. And I don't regret a single day having to leave aside of psychology to become a part of this project. I think it has made me grow in so many different ways, which I think it's amazing. I mean, I've never thought in a million years I would be traveling to talking about cacao and chocolate through the States.
That's great.
That's amazing. That's one of the most amazing things. And all the people that we've known since La Rifa started, I think that's... I'm not going to cry, but that's probably the best thing that La Rifa has given to me, at least.
Yeah. In the last few minutes of the interview, we like to do a fun rapid fire segment. Are you ready? I'm going to ask you really hard questions. Really, it's going to be really challenging.
Ready.
All right. If you could choose a superpower, what superpower would you choose?
Invisibility.
Invisibility. What would you? Why invisibility? What would you? What would you do?
I think because I'm a psychologist, I like to see how people interact, and I like to see like everything surrounding me. But I don't know why. I just like seeing things
like
without
just being in the
me.
Background.
Uh-huh. Yeah. Exactly.
And Danielle, what about you?
Jump very, very tall. Come on.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Where would you jump to? What would you jump? Like, how would you use it?
Because if you jump very, very tall,
yeah.
you can play good basketball, football, and you can move in the city
really fast.
Very
you could
fast.
Get a job on a cacao farm, jumping up to pick the pods from the tops of the trees. It's very, very utilitarian. What's the best meal that you've ever eaten that cost less than $5?
In Tabasco, they have a pushkawa, which is like a really big tamal that they put inside banana leaves, pork and beans, fresh cheese, and what else? Chicken,
bananas,
and there's just like a wrap
How
burrito.
Big is it?
It's really big. It's like.
She's holding her arms
share
like
it.
She's holding
yeah.
a baby.
Like
it's
a
like
baby.
The size
baby
of
size. Yeah. So you can eat it with your, I don't know, friend.
Uh-huh. Or ten friends, maybe.
Ten friends. And it's really good and it's really cheap because those are things that you can find inside of the farm. Not the cacao plantation, but the farm with the
Danielle, do you have a...
Comida barata.
Taco al pastor.
Yeah.
Tacos al pastor. Have you found any good ones in New York or not really?
No.
Not yet.
Not yet, but still looking.
There's some carts in Jackson Heights and Queens. I don't know if you've explored that neighborhood. Corona and Jackson Heights. There's a big Mexican population.
Good.
Some decent pastor. I think not anything like you'll get in Mexico City.
Okay. We can try.
One more question. If you had to live with only one kitchen tool for the rest of your life, what kitchen tool would you choose? You can't use anything else. It can only be.
¿Qué utensilio de cocina usarías para el así si nada más pudieras usar ese? I think a knife.
Mm.
Yeah, because you can stir with the knife.
Oh yeah,
you
that's
can
true. It's
chop
very,
things
it's
with the
flexible.
Knife. Yeah, knife
a
would
knife.
Be my
a certain
my
shape,
option.
A certain size.
Butcher knife.
A butcher knife, like
yeah,
a big,
because
big
I'm
butcher
tiny,
knife.
So I need something to reaffirm
Danielle,
my power.
What about you?
I think comal.
Yeah,
it's a like comal. A plancha.
Yeah, and comal. I like a big clay plate that you use to cook things on, like a cooking surface. Yeah.
I think you can use for cook eggs, tortillas, many.
What's the craziest thing you've ever cooked on a comal?
¿Qué es lo más loco que has cocinado en un comal?
I think. Eggs is super weird.
Yeah.
Scrambled or fried? How do you?
They are estrellado.
Like sunny side up.
Yeah. Exactly.
Just like fried in the middle of the comal.
Yeah.
With butter? How do you do it? Or
no,
some fat?
You put the cal.
Yeah. So.
Cal.
So a comal is a big clay cooking surface, and you use a lye, like a very white. Powder
uh-huh.
mixed with water called cal, to finish the surface, to seal it.
Yeah. It's like a Teflon.
Like nonstick.
Yeah.
That's great. Well, thank you so much for joining me.
Thank you. Sorry for my bad answers.
No, it's such a pleasure. Where can our listeners find out more about your work, learn more about cacao agriculture, cacao farms and farming, and where can they find your products?
We work at La Rifa, and we can... You have to follow us on Instagram, on Facebook as La Rifa Chocolateria.
LARIFA.
Like the raffle, but La Rifa. Because
LARIFA, is that right?
Yeah, okay. Exactly.
LARIFA.
Okay.
La Rifa. Okay.
It's a Mexican slang.
Yeah, it's a Mexican slang. It's a raffle. La Rifa means the raffle, but it also means when something is really cool, you say, oh, Ethan. You rifas. So chocolate is amazing. So el chocolate rifa.
Okay.
That's why it's La Rifa. It's called La Rifa. So find us on Instagram, on Facebook. Text us on Instagram, Facebook. We'll make sure.
Do you ship? Are your products available for sale in the U.S. or
we can
ship
it to the to the United States? We can make it work.
Aha! You can find me in Dark Mother.
Right now we have in Chicago a coffee shop is selling our chocolate bars. So if you live in Chicago, step by, you can find us at Dark Matter Coffee Shop.
And maybe there will be some other places sometime soon.
People
can follow you on Instagram and find out.
Follow us on Instagram for further notice.
Thank you so much. You can, as always, you can reach us, yfood@heritageradionetwork.org. You can reach me via my spice company, Burlap and Barrel, and you can reach Valerie at Foodie in New York on Instagram and Facebook. Thanks to Amanda, our awesome sound engineer, and to the Red Crickets for our theme song, which is called Blind. See you next week.
This program is powered by Simplecast.
YFood is powered by Simplecast. Thanks for listening to Heritage Radio Network, food radio supported by you. For our freshest content, subscribe to our newsletter. Enter your email at the bottom of our website, heritageradionetwork.org. Connect with us on Instagram and Twitter at @heritage_radio. You can also find us at facebook.com/heritageradionetwork.
Heritage Radio Network is a nonprofit organization driving conversations to make the world a better, fairer, more delicious place. And we couldn't do it without support from listeners like you. Want to be a part of the food world's most innovative community? Subscribe to the shows you like, tell your friends, and please join the HRN family by becoming a member. Just click on the beating heart at the top right of our homepage. Thanks for listening.